From west to east and kingdom to kingdom, you're listening to the Diz Unplugged Connecting with Walt podcast. Connecting with Walt is brought to you by Dreams Unlimited Travel, experts at helping you plan the perfect Disney vacation. Visit them on the web at dreamsunlimitedtravel.com. Hello and welcome to episode 62 of Connecting with Walt. I am your host and Diz historian, Michael Bowling. I am joined by my co-host, producer, and good friend, Craig Williams. Craig, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing well. Hopefully, by the time this airs, you and I have had a wonderful time having dinner together with our wives at Walt Disney World. We've celebrated Independence Day, and we've just had a grand old time.
Absolutely.
For people who listened to last week's episode, as you know, we've had to pre-record this episode in advance because it's my turn to be on vacation. So this is a bit of a bonus edition. As a result, we were originally not going to have an episode this week because I was traveling, but as we mentioned before, there were so many questions that you sent in for our quarterly, Q&A episode that we decided to have two episodes. And so as a result of that, though, we will not have our This Week in Disney History quiz.
No.
Because this is a bit of a bonus episode, even though it will be a full-length episode. So more on that in a bit. I know, Craig, you updated folks last week on our This Week in Disney History quiz listener contest. So we're looking forward to seeing which one of you out there, was selected and going to be challenging Craig.
Oh, at this point, from when this releases, we're going to be recording in a couple days. So hope you're ready.
Yeah. So what we're going to do now is the category that we did not do last week was the theme park category. So that is what we are going to focus on. And if we decide to jump into one of the other categories, we will. But we have a lot of questions from this one.
Oh, yeah,
so I'm just getting there. So should I, do you want me to start first this time, Craig?
Yeah, I'm going to have you kick it off.
Okay. All right, let's see. I think I'm just going to start out with the first one here. Julie asked, what is your favorite Walt Disney World park, and or what's your favorite to least favorite lands in the Magic Kingdom?
See, this is just a loaded question. I know you have a dedicated answer with it, so I could answer yours for you, but mine's a lot more difficult. Because it really does just depend on the week for me. Obviously, I love the Magic Kingdom. That's my ultimate kind of go-to. The only issue with that is the whole having to go through the complication as a local of getting to the park itself. What could be a nice, easy, like 10-15 minute ride and then just walk in 5 minutes like all the other parks for me, turns into a 45 minute to an hour ordeal at the Magic Kingdom. And that takes away from a lot of the joy in it. But so without saying Magic Kingdom, for me, I'm probably going to blow people's minds on this one and say that my favorite park that I like going to right now is actually Hollywood Studios.
And, yeah, I knew you were going to say that. It's Star Wars, isn't it?
It's not just... I do love Star Tours. I think it's a great attraction, but... one of my ultimate favorite attractions in Walt Disney World is Tower of Terror. And I love it. Walking in there and seeing it and going on it just brings me so much joy still to this day, especially as much as I hated it as a kid. not liking drops and going up and down. It's amazing now how much I have an appreciation for it. And, you know, I still appreciate a good rock and roller coaster, Toy Story Mania every now and then. But I love being able to still go and just sit and enjoy the Muppet Vision 3D. And I know it's not considered a complete park to many, especially those who don't like going to shows. They don't see a lot of the value in it, and I get that aspect, but there's so much there that appeals to me. I still love Hollywood Brown Derby, one of my mm-hmm. favorite places to eat, and you know, you and I even shared a meal there a couple years ago, and mm-hmm. just wonderful, and that one's always stuck with me. And I love going to Baseline Tap House and getting a beer. And you know, I know in the future I'm gonna love Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, and as of this release, Toy Story Land is officially open, but I still haven't stepped in from the time we're recording, so I can't comment on that. But I've been kind of championing it for a while, that there's more to Hollywood Studios than people give it credit for. Yes, losing Great Movie Ride was a big bad part of it, but there's still a lot of good in it. And I'm not gonna, the second part of it, I know I said what's the favorite to least favorite, I'm not gonna go ahead and rank all of them. I will just give my favorite and my least favorite in Magic Kingdom, and as of this current moment, because it does shift, I would say my favorite is Frontierland and my least favorite is Tomorrowland.
Okay, good. My favorite Walt Disney World park, I think everyone knows, it's Animal Kingdom. I love Animal Kingdom. The peacefulness and contentment that people have when they walk down like Disneyland's Main Street USA or the Magic Kingdoms is what I experience. I experience that at Disneyland. I have that same feeling when I go into Animal Kingdom. I just think it's so beautiful. The detail that went into that by the Imagineers, the lushness of it, the animals. I like everything about that park. Even Avatar Land of Pandora, I enjoy. I still have a hard time with it being in Animal Kingdom, but I enjoy it. I think they executed it well. And I just love that park. And, you know, I don't know what else they're going to do to it. I hope that they still stay true to the core of what that park's about and don't get too far off. But, because for me, it's all about the animals and the environment and all that. And I don't want them to stray too much from that. But I love that park.
I agree. And, I think I would value it more if... even now, as a last-minute planner, as a local, it is so difficult to go there anymore and pick up a same-day fast pass for Expedition mm-hmm. Everest or the safaris, you know, unless it's, like, really late at night, which a lot of times that doesn't work with my schedule. I have more success pulling last-minute fast passes for Flight of Passage than I do some of the other attractions around the park. So that's kind of taken away from it. Like, I love the safaris, but I can't justify waiting an hour to go there. So as much as I enjoy just going and doing like the nature walks, Pandora has been a blessing and a curse on my enjoyment of Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Favorite to least favorite lands in Magic Kingdom? Mine are probably pretty close to yours. I think my favorite is Liberty Square. It's funny because my favorite at Disneyland is New Orleans Square. So it's the unique lands for Magic Kingdom and Disneyland that are my favorite. Again, I like the feel of Liberty Square. I like the history aspect of it. Well, with one exception. And... I like the exterior of the Haunted Mansion. I love Hall of Presidents. I like the being on the water. and the vistas that are created there. So, I enjoy Liberty Square.
Yeah.
Least favorite, again, is probably Tomorrowland, and that's true in both parks. They just don't know what to do with Tomorrowland, and they're losing their... They sort of lost their vision for it.
Yeah, on paper, Liberty Square, I've said it in a best and worst show, Liberty Square is, I think, overall the best. It doesn't mean it's my favorite, but I think it is the best on paper. Tomorrowland, it's that mishmash. Space Mountain is great, and in Carousel of Progress is still just a joy to watch, and the People Mover is always fun and relaxing, but I really don't care for Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin. And
yeah, neither do I.
I dislike Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor mm-hmm. every time I do it, and while Speedway isn't for me, again, it's just it. I enjoy the fumes from it, and I enjoy that kids have the ability to ride. But if it was more unique, like Disneyland's Autopia, that's a different story. But it's not. But it's Tomorrowland's just like you said, it's mishmash. It's a mess. It's Tomorrowland.
Yeah, and the rumors that are just starting about what might be coming, it sounds like it's getting more, it's going to be the land of Pixar.
Yeah.
Rather than Tomorrowland, it'll be Pixar land. So, and I think that's too bad.
Yeah. So. Okay, so my time to pick a question, and it's one that we've kind of talked about before in the past, but always fun to bring it up and think about it. But Justin asks, what part of the U.S. do you think we need another Disneyland or Disney World, or do we need another?
Mm-hmm. I think I grouped them all together. There is a whole lot of questions on this theme.
Yeah,
there's like five of them or so here.
Yeah, because we have it from Dawn as well, too, not considering cost, land availability, all that. Adam threw it in there, too. So it's all of you, but I think Justin's is probably the most to the point.
Yeah, Patricia asked as well.
Yeah.
And Jake, well, no, not Jake. He's just a little different. I think that we do need another Walt Disney World, Disneyland kind of thing in the United States. Disneyland really doesn't have any more room for expansion. Walt Disney World is... they need more theme parks. I mean, they keep building hotels, but I think we're getting to the point with all of the theme parks in North America that I think guest comfort is starting to become an issue where, the lines, are people getting a good value for, when they're only going on four or five attractions in a day, maybe.
Yeah. It is well known that even if the Walt Disney World Resort hotels are at full capacity, then that still doesn't bring any of the theme parks, like all of the theme parks together, that still wouldn't bring them to capacity. So that's why they still are building more hotels. But at the same time, it's more people than just those staying at the hotels who are coming to the parks.
Exactly. And so I would like them to somewhere in the United States, I would like them to build a full resort. It has to be on the level of like Tokyo Disneyland, Disney Sea at minimum. And I think it needs to be in the center of the United States somewhere. There would have to be, I think, one of the things is that there would have to be a castle park, and include, but have it be different. Don't just build Cinderella Castle or Sleeping Beauty Castle. We've got plenty of those, around the world. And don't do the all the princesses live here, like in Shanghai, and now they're doing that in Hong Kong. No. Make an Ariel's castle. Make one for Belle. Do something like that. Choose a princess and theme it to that. And include a few of the franchise attractions that we've come to expect in a Disney park. But with the latest technology, and build new ones that aren't anywhere, maybe. And I think there needs to be another park at least one more park, and then make that completely different from what's in North America.
Yeah.
Let the Imagineers go wild with this. I mean, there's certainly enough stuff they've blue skied over the years. And I also think in addition to that, there has to be at least a water park, a themed water park of some sort, a couple of golf courses, probably a wedding pavilion, camping, several hotels, put a DVC resort in there, and then let Imagineers loose on creating a new Disney experience. And, you know, rather than just cloning everything. And it would need to be in an area with plenty of land, you know, which can be a challenge. And it has to be close to transportation, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that, again, limits it. Although wherever they build it, transportation is going to find them.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
But, yeah, I think the time has come. They really need a third Disney resort somewhere.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought about it many times before, sometimes out loud, sometimes on other shows. I think I would really like to see somewhere either in the New York area right around Lake Erie, or the northwestern Pennsylvania in that area as well too, or the other place where I could see it working out really well is somewhere in southern Ohio, you know, or even northern Kentucky. So it's, especially when you start to get to like southern Ohio, you're talking hot summers, you know, 90 degree days, but not the terrible humidity that you deal with in Florida, but then a nice mild winter where you might see snow every now and then. So kind of in that same Disneyland Paris mindset that it could happen. That doesn't mean it necessarily will, but it could. But it's not also abnormal to just see temperatures in the 40s and 50s for the most part. So I feel like that could be a good area. And I feel like Ohio has placed, they've kind of built out their place in terms of having amusement parks with Cedar Point basically being the roller coaster capital of the world, and then Kings Island on the other side of the state being a staple for many, many years and featured in the Brady Bunch. It's it's just they've already had such an important place with amusement parks that I feel like having Disney in there too would be another big monumental part of it. But I would also, as much as I dislike the state of Michigan, I would love to see what they could do with a more northern park where it is just a complete different environment, harsher winters, also a lot of beautiful landscapes that could really just build a park out in the middle of nowhere in the country. There could be a lot done there. So I'm with you in it. I would like to see it definitely in either kind of east to Midwest, but more on the northern side of things. I'm one of those people. I don't want to see one in Texas. I know it would appeal to a lot of people, but for me, that's just something that I couldn't see myself ever wanting to get excited about. I loved going to Dallas. I really want to go to Austin one day. I want to go to Houston. There's many places in Texas I want to go to, but to see a Disney park there, it's just, in my mind, it's not something that seems ideal for me.
Oh, they could have a whole Davy Crockett area of the park.
They could.
There. But the only problem with having it in the northern part of the United States is the snow, and that's why Walt didn't build up there, was because it would cause the park to have to close, and it would not be financially feasible, I know he felt. So that's the only drawback. And yeah, personally, I don't know if I want to go to a theme park in the snow. I did it once at Tokyo Disneyland. That was That was fine.
I'm weird. I like getting bundled up and being outside when it's cold. So
I am not a cold weather person. Even though it gets cold where we live, I'm fine with it. But I don't necessarily want a vacation in it. So, alrighty, sounds good.
Okay, so it is your turn. Is it?
Okay, let's skip through all the similar ones. Let's see. Well, here's one because I think you can comment on this. This is from Olivia. How do you think Disney should educate and train its cast members about Walt's legacy? When I worked at the Magic Kingdom, I was a little saddened at my coworkers' lack of Disney pride and knowledge.
See, the problem stems from... For me, the problem stems with it's not an educate and train thing. It's I know I have heard stories of people who went through their traditions and their training with a little bit of interest in Disney and came out the other side completely emphatic about Disney. But that's few and far between. So I don't think there is a way. I don't think there is a way that Disney should educate and train its cast members about Walt's legacy. I think the whole goal should be on finding people who do have that passion for it up front. The jobs will fill themselves in that sense. I know Walt Disney World has a lot of jobs to fill when it comes to that, but you know, it's about weeding out the people who truly care. So, and any company, you know, should be, when they're hiring, it really should be a balance between people who are right for the job and people who are passionate about it too. And it can't, it shouldn't sway any which one way or another too much. You know, you can't have someone who's perfect on paper, but then doesn't care a single lick about Walt Disney World. They're not going to last. Same thing goes for the opposite. They can have all the passion about Walt Disney and the parks, and they can love coming, but if they're not cut out to be dealing with frontline operations or the intensity and the commitment that it takes to keep up in back of house operations, then it's just not going to work. So I think it really is. With Walt's legacy, it's something that you have to have going into it. So I don't think Disney should educate and train on it. They should put out a better net on trying to find the people who already have that Disney pride and knowledge. And that's something I've felt like for a long time. You know, it's I some of my closest friends, people that I lived with when I was on the college program, you know, they, some of them loved Disney and some were just there for something to do and to help boost their resume a little bit. And that didn't mean that they were bad cast members, but in that there's instances where I saw them at times even be a better cast member than I think I was. And I don't like to toot my own horn, but despite being let go for other reasons, you know, anytime I had the chance to make magic moments happen or take pride in my work, I went above and beyond and tried to do so. And I had friends that didn't really care about Disney who would do the same thing. So it's just the balance has to be found. And it seems like not just at Disney, even at Universal. I know it's a different topic on with that, because that's more about being passionate about the brand and not the legacy. But when they started hiring just people to fill spots instead of people passionate about the brand, it started showing over there too. So it's regardless, it all comes back to you can't teach people to care. But you can find people who care. It might take a little work and a little bit of extra effort, but I think ultimately it's worth it. And that's just my opinion.
No, I agree. I do think, though, that they can educate them about Walt. They should definitely know who their founder is.
Yeah.
And you know, the founder of the company and what his legacy is. Yeah. You should definitely know that. But you're right. There has to be some intrinsic understanding, value, commitment, passion already there.
Yeah, it's a very big difference between knowing and caring. Mm-hmm. And they can teach people left and right all they want to. That doesn't mean they'll care.
I know. Oh, I agree. And I mean, but I have been appalled sometimes by the lack of knowledge that people who are in positions where they're supposed to have knowledge about Walt and the company, and they don't. There was one tour I took a few years ago at Epcot. I don't know if it was Hidden Epcot, whatever it was called. And the stuff this woman was saying, I was shocked. And she was saying how Iwerks was the one responsible for Walt losing Oswald. And I mean, it just went on and on and on. And she was so proud of this tour because she was the one who wrote it and all this stuff. And I thought, how did you get this far up in the company when you don't know who your founder is? So when I didn't say anything to her during the tour, and then I tried to talk to her afterwards, and I said, you know, these are things I started going through, stuff that was not correct. And she said, well, this is what I was told. And I thought, well, you just told me you wrote the thing. And I mean, you told everybody. And then I realized there was no talking to her. So and I've come across that a few times where, you know, they definitely need to learn about their founder.
Yeah.
And some basic facts and things. So anyway. All right.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I'm going to pick another one that's right up your alley, especially. Mm-hmm. And we kind of got two questions that were somewhat similar about this, but they come from Warren and Jeff. Warren said Disney spends a lot of time and effort on getting the floor of their parks right. They do this with both real and fake plants. Where do you think they've done their best work? Where could they have done better? Jeff also said, being in the landscape industry, appreciate the effort made by Disney for immersive landscaping as part of theming. If you were able to pick your favorite and least favorite landscapes in Walt Disney World, what would they be and why? So,
okay. Alrighty, let's see. I'll sort of do all of this here. Yeah. For I agree. Sometimes I'll just go around and I'm taking photos of their flower beds and their plants and their groupings, you know, their pots, flower pots, you know, and things like that, just mainly for ideas and things. I know my wife used to joke, you know, when our children were little and they'd turn around and they'd go, where's dad? And then Carol would say, oh, he's probably taking photos of flowers somewhere. And then they would have to backtrack, and sure enough, you know, there I was. And so some of the best work that they've done, I think, for Warren's question, I think Disneyland, couple of best places, the Jungle Cruise, because I mean, basically it's a desert there and a very temperate climate zone, and just the fact that Bill Evans could get things growing to make it look like a jungle, you know, in the beginning, to the point that it's now created its own environment to where they can grow tropical plants and things there, I think that's spectacular. And the Haunted Mansion, they used to have a wonderful tour. It was a horticultural tour. It did not last long. It was fascinating. And unfortunately, I lost my notes to it. But one of the things they went through was how plants are selected and why throughout the park. And when we got to the Haunted Mansion, it was fascinating from the colors of the plants and the emotion that they were supposed to depict, whether it was foreboding or awe or whatever it might be, to the and this is down to the leaves and all that, to how the different trees were and how they how the branches grew, because again, it would give you an uncomfortable feeling and all that, or how some plants, they were blood red, you know, and again, for the, you know, to complement what was going on inside the mansion, all this. It was amazing. And so that they put that much thought into virtually every single thing they planted in front and around that mansion, it boggled my mind. What could be better? I think Disney's California Adventure. I just don't think of that as a very highly landscaped park. Especially that whole swath where you're walking towards, well, now it's Pixar Pier, and there's practically nothing. I hate that one walk where you go along. It's where, where Ariel's, Voyage of the Little Mermaid is and all of that. That's just concrete city there. And also Hong Kong Disneyland, some of the resorts, we laughed about their landscaping. It was like, what were they thinking? I mean, there'd be a plant here, a plant there, and all that. And they could do better there.
Yeah. Well, I completely agree with you on the Jungle Cruise, though. That's Disneyland's Jungle Cruise, that is. That sticks out to me is, in my opinion, their best work. And especially my favorite spot, like many others, is at the exit of Indiana Jones Adventure. Being able to stand and feel like you're in the jungle there, and then also see the Jungle Cruise out in front of you. It's a very special area. It's just done really well. And where I think they could have done better for sure is, it used to be better, and it's just digressed over time and gotten worse, but my home park, Magic Kingdom, the more trees that have been taken away in there just bums me out more and more. The hub is just, while the sitting areas are nice with the fake grass and such, I miss trees in this mm-hmm. area. I miss the horticulture in there. It had such a big impact, and even with the landscaping, having the waterways that were eventually leveled off for the extra seating areas and stuff, that was a big loss. It's not that it's not beautiful now, it's just it has gone down, it's gone away from what it was, and that to me is a big thing. So, even though places like Hollywood Studios and Epcot aren't nearly is taken care of in terms of having trees and plant life around, with the exception of Epcot during Flower and Garden, that's the asterisk on it, then it's mm-hmm. it's plenty of enough. But during the regular part of the year, no, not so much. But I can kind of give those passes because they were never overly done with it, so it's not I would like to see more, but I can do without it. But Magic Kingdom's one for sure that watching it get more concrete over time has been a disappointment for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now for Jeff's question, if we pick a favorite, least favorite landscapes of Walt Disney World, what would they be and why? So for mine, and I guess you mentioned yours, but for mine, Animal Kingdom, I talked about that on last week's show. It's just amazing. It is so lush and so beautiful. And, I just love it. I just love walking around it. And my least, like you said, I think Epcot's Future World. It's they're doing better. I mean, they're getting in more planters and things like that, but I don't know why. It's the same thing. It's like both Tomorrowlands and all that. Why is the future devoid of plant life as it's depicted? I don't know, but they need to do better. All of these, even the Contemporary Resort. There's not a lot of landscaping there.
Yeah. With Tomorrowland, isn't it a fact though that in Disneyland all the plants that are there are edible?
Or they are.
Just make that up.
Okay. No, it's true. Yeah, that was the latest redo that they did.
Yeah. See, at least that's something. I don't think you should eat anything in Florida's Tomorrowland.
Yeah. Well, they're edible plants, but no, they should not be eaten at Disneyland because, you know, they're sprayed and, you know, stuff like that.
Hey, so. You know, it's, we're used to the chemicals by now, right?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, it's my turn now.
Yes.
Let's see. I'm going through here because now some... Oh, here's one from Ashley. Which attraction closures, updates, and or attraction removals from the parks do you feel was the most short-sighted? She writes, Journey into Imagination is an obvious choice.
That is an obvious choice. I will try to keep as organized with this as possible because some of them are... Some of them are just going to be, like, brief mentions. Like, one thing that it wasn't necessarily short-sighted at the time, but it still pains me to know that Cranium Command is essentially still just sitting in place. Mm-hmm. And granted, the actors that were used in it, a lot of the SNL, cast members of the early 90s, they are not as relevant as they were back then, but even this space, like, people are talking about wanting something inside out at Epcot or Walt Disney World in general. I feel like with the theater still there, with a little bit of tweaks and adjustments, it can immediately be repurposed into inside out. And but then you have to do something with the entire pavilion as a whole, which we know is going to happen. But that's like one thing that sticks out to me now. It wasn't short-sighted at the time, but now the lack of doing anything with it kind of feels a little bit short-sighted. I'm still in the boat. We've talked about it before on this and other shows. I was a huge fan of Alien Encounter. So mm-hmm. its closure just really, really hit hard and has never really, really left. I miss it dearly, and if I could have that back, that would be just huge. Mr. Toad here is another one too. It's obviously there was a battle fought over that one that was completely lost, but it's that one obviously came down to merchandising and the love of Winnie the Pooh. So that's, I mean, I don't even know if you could argue that was short-sighted. There was a lot of sight put into that with money signs. But yeah, I think overall the big one for me would still definitely be Alien Encounter closing mm-hmm. for Stitch's Great Escape. That just it didn't feel right then, and it still doesn't feel right today.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. The Wonders of Life Pavilion. I know they lost their sponsors, so they sort of lost interest in the pavilion and allowed it to languish. But it's unfortunate. They could have done so much with that over time.
Yeah, and so, I mean, Body Wars was not good. I don't like when people defend it. It was not a good ride.
I don't have negative memories of it, but.
I never enjoyed it. I thought, I mean, when you had Star Tours just right across the way over at Hollywood Studios, MGM at the time, it's Body Wars just felt like a mall simulator compared to it, for me, at least.
See,
as a kid.
I wrote it before Star Tours, you know, ever opened, I think. So, over there. But now for me on the Disneyland side, I think closing Disneyland's People Mover was a big mistake. There was a lot of things. Just the whole cutting the budget for the reimagining of Tomorrowland, resulting in the 1998 New Tomorrowland, really short-sighted, because look at the state of Tomorrowland now. Not replacing America Sings with another attraction, which again was part of the cost cutting there. You know, it's just a mess over there. And and then the closures of a lot of family-oriented things at Disneyland's Downtown Disney, like the Rainforest Cafe, which a lot of people don't like, but, you know, children like it. Families like it. Our granddaughter loved that place. Yeah. Earl of Sandwich, Build-A-Bear. These are family things, and these were all wildly popular. Again, for the new hotel in Downtown Disney that I am not a fan of right now, from everything I've seen of it. So, you know, I don't know. Hopefully that's not going to be short-sighted, but I feel like they're getting more upscale in Downtown Disney. And, you know, they still need some family-oriented places to eat and activities and things like that in Downtown Disney. So hopefully they will remember that as they reimagine that whole area.
Yeah, it's sad that they probably won't, but you know what? There's always a Home at Garden Walk.
Yes, that's true. I mean, the rumor is that Rainforest Cafe and Earl of Sandwich may find new homes once the restaurant, once the hotel opens.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know, that we heard that months ago. So who knows? You know how things change as time progresses.
Exactly. So. Okay, let me ask you a question, and this one is coming from Kate, and Kate asked, what is a tour you would love to see offered at each of the parks?
Definitely one is that horticultural tour. I would like to see that brought back at to Disneyland. That was just such a fascinating tour. It was very different, and I just really enjoyed it, just a whole lot. So that's what I'd like at Disneyland. So,
mine is one that I know it will never happen, but it would be amazing if it could. But one of the perks of being a cast member, especially if you work in attractions and you're very lucky enough to be with a very good team in it, is you may have the chance every now and then to do walkthroughs of different attractions with the lights on. And, you know, there have been, like when Great Movie Ride closed, there is websites out there who are doing walkthroughs of it. I believe D23 did an event that included it as well. So, and every now and then Tables in Wonderland would do a dinner in there with that as well too. But cast members are given the opportunity to walk through the Haunted Mansion and get up close to the animatronics and take pictures with them. And same thing in Spaceship Earth. They're able to get up close to all of the animatronics in there as well too, the ones that are on the side with the stairs, that is. And even beyond that, there's other experiences that sometimes the cast members get to do. One that I got to partake in, I still kick myself because I slept through my Haunted Mansion walkthrough with the lights on, and I will never forgive myself for that. But I missed out on that, but I did get to do Rock and Roller Coaster with the lights on. And one of the scariest parts of it is the control operators timed out the trains so we'd be sitting on the third brake block and we'd be able to watch a train being launched in and go through the first couple loops and such. And that was, I mean, you know you're completely safe. It's controlled by the most high-tech computers. But still, getting to sit inside Rock and Roller Coaster, strapped into your vehicle, watching a train being shot in there at the speeds that it is, and start going through those loops, it's just really cool. So the tours that I would love to see offered, you know, maybe it's through D23 every now and then, very, very limited groups and very hard to get. But some of these experiences that you can only get as cast members going on lights on versions, going through lights on versions of the attractions, whether it's walking them or riding in them. But every now and then, just seeing something special like that pop up, because I know it's, you know, it is a great perk of being a cast member. It's definitely a way to show appreciation, is by giving them experiences that they don't get anywhere else. But at the same time too, it's just one of those things when you get the chance to do them, it's very, very cool and very memorable. And it's one of those things that I take away my short time of working at Disney. I'll never forget sitting on Rock and Roller Coaster and watching it like that. And I'll never forget about the experiences that I had as a cast member or as a team member at Universal, getting to walk some attractions in places that you don't normally get to. So that's what I would say in terms of that.
You know, Walt Disney World is much better about allowing guests back in backstage areas than Disneyland, because I've been on a number of tours at Walt Disney World where you can go backstage.
Yeah.
And Disneyland, it's really only Adventures by Disney tours that allow that. They're very protective. What I'm disappointed with Animal Kingdom is they don't have more tours that take you to see, you know, about like the animal care and things like that. I would be interested in that. What's that 8-hour tour that they do at Walt Disney World? I can't think of it, the name of it, because I did it. And, you know, you go to each of the parks, and it's a fantastic tour.
Is that one Keys to the Kingdom?
It maybe, or is it? I thought it was like Backstage or Magic or something.
It could be Backstage Magic. I don't do the tours very often, if ever, so I don't know their names off the top of my head.
Well, this is an 8-hour one, and I you see some fantastic stuff. You do go behind the scenes at Haunted Mansion and American Adventure, and I mean, it's amazing. And I was all excited going to Animal Kingdom. I was supposed to see behind the scenes. It was basically the bathroom stop. What they considered behind the scenes was, you know, talking to the tour guides. You know, the, you know how they have the tours where you can go out and you trek around.
Yeah.
You go on the... how they prepare for those tours. Like, well, we order lunch for the guests and make sure it's all here, and we have all the equipment laid out. I'm standing thinking, are you kidding me? This is backstage, and it was so disappointing. I thought we're going to see the animal enclosures. We're going to see how you prepare their food. We're going to do no nothing like that. So that's the kind of tour I would like to see.
Yeah,
at Animal Kingdom. Yeah. So.
Okay. Okay, your turn.
Let's see here. Oh, here we go. Why do we not see Roger Rabbit as a costume character at Disneyland anymore? He was very heavily featured in the sing-along video tape, Disneyland Fun. Why is he gone but the cartoon spin attraction remains? Well, you probably can explain it to us as our movie critic.
I would like to. I mean, I generally still don't understand completely, because I have seen Roger Rabbit come out there during Easter and other special occasions. So to me, I've always wondered, why not just put him outside of the attraction, you know, at least seasonally. So, yeah. But do you know firsthand why he's gone?
I think it was my understanding that because of the sort of the falling out between Spielberg and Michael Eisner, Disney at the time, and it's just that Spielberg, if I'm remembering this off the top of my head, Spielberg was supposed to be able to have, he had creative control and all that on that character, and there was also a sharing of... profits and things like that. It was just a battle. It was just constant, you know, Disney didn't own Roger Rabbit outright. And so when things fell apart between Spielberg's company and Disney, they just halted everything on Roger Rabbit. So when they got into that distribution agreement for a time where they were going to distribute DreamWorks films, they were hoping that meant, oh good, now maybe Spielberg will be more open to working with Disney on Roger Rabbit, but that was all very short-lived.
I mean, there were some good ones in there, like Bridge of Spies was Spielberg and distributed through there, but you know, things like the BFG just didn't really hit and latch. But I see, that's where my problem is. I do know about the issues with them in that, but that's why it's always confused me that it's like, okay, well, isn't it general, maybe we won't, but we'll choose to bring them out at certain times. Like, yeah. To me, that's where it doesn't make sense, where that's where I don't necessarily believe that as much. Maybe they're not heavily invested in, like, I don't want to break the fourth wall here for all the kids out there and shatter all their realities, but maybe it just comes down to they don't have enough Roger Rabbit costumes, and it's to have them made is just out of the question with that. So that's why they only bring it out for special occasions. It could be something as simple as that. I know there's been times when we've had events happen out here in Walt Disney World, and they've wanted characters that have had to come straight from Disneyland just to have it actually accomplished. So it could be something as simple as that. Regardless, I think both you and I really love Roger Rabbit and wish that his presence was bigger. And after being at Fan Days in Disneyland Paris and having Eddie Valiant there too, I wish that could be incorporated as well. Just that would be a hoot in Toontown.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, and you know, he appears at Fantasmic, at the end of Fantasmic, and Design from time to time. He has his little ribbon that he's waving. You know, waving on the Mark Twain. So, but yeah, otherwise, yeah, we don't see very much of him. We used to see him at Easter sometimes.
Yeah, that was the one time I met him in Disneyland. Was during Easter. Then I remember at least once or twice since then where he's popped up for special events. I want to say he was at one of the 24-hour events as well too. But yeah, just underutilized, and while it probably does have a lot to do with the relationship there, I do have a feeling, and I hope if someone has that extra knowledge, they'll let us know, but I have a feeling it's as simple as something dumb as they just don't have a lot of costumes. we can't get the budget for one extra costume. It's too much.
Yeah. Alrighty.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you this one from Casey. Do you think Walt's apartment should be open for public viewing on Main Street in Disneyland?
You know, due to its small size, I really don't think this is feasible. I think, regrettably, it needs to be limited to special tours like, you know, Walk and Walt's Footsteps or the Adventures by Disney Backstage Magic. It's something that should be special and treasured. And I think just given the number of guests, daily guests that would want to see this, I see the apartment, understandably. I just think that having that many people go through it, there'd be damage to it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I would love for it to be open to the public anytime you want to just go up there and see it. I wish it would be open, but having done it, it's not easily accessible by any means. It's definitely tight and narrow, and then once you're inside, it is small. And at most, all they could let you do is walk into the doorway and get a look inside. Not like in the tours where you're able to kind of go back and see the bathroom and get a better feel for the interior, but it's not big. So they would have to limit how they do it if they ever did it. But I still would love for people to get an idea for what's up there if they don't ever have the possibility of going up there. So maybe it's something as simple as, like, I know this sounds really dumb, but attaching like a periscope inside the firehouse so you can look into it and look up and see what it looks like inside the apartment. Something like that. Just anything to give people an idea of what it looks like, those that won't ever have a chance to get up there. So, because it is something special that a picture couldn't necessarily do it justice, but I feel like there has to be some sort of medium in between of actually going in there or just looking at the variety of pictures that are out there, and most of them, you know, are archive images from Disney, since mm-hmm. they're very strict about photography when you're actually up there.
Yes, they are. Yeah. Okay.
I think we have time for one more question, so I'm going to let you choose it, especially since it's your turn.
Oh, thank you. All right. Well, this is just a fun one. Because there's so many other good ones in here, but to both of you, Michael and Craig, this is from Doug. What is the one thing you would recommend doing on an anniversary trip with your wife to Disneyland? Thanks so much, guys. I have a feeling Doug might have a reason for this. So I thought, okay, let's help Doug out here. So Craig, it's your anniversary. You're taking Kylie to Disneyland. What's the one thing you would do?
That's a tough one. Just because for me, it's, I would have to overcome what I don't want to say it in that way, but I'd have to overcome what I think is special about Disneyland and focus on what her enjoyment would be in it. Because, you know, I'm the type of person that I would say, well, you know, you have to try to get Chef's Table at Napa Rose. At night for the perfect meal. That is the best way to do it, and you have to eat at this place, and you have to see the fireworks from this vantage point. And that's the type of person I am, and I've only been lucky enough to travel to Disneyland a couple times with Kylie. And you know, usually when I try to do things like that while we have a good time, it's never as special as you want it to be. So the one thing I recommend doing on a special trip like that is being spontaneous. Just letting the day happen and seeing where it goes. If it's an anniversary trip, chances are if you're taking that trip, you're still in love with each other and you still enjoy being around each other. So unless you're the type of people who fight constantly because neither one of them wants to make a decision, you're going to enjoy each other's time together, and the day is going to unfold naturally. You know, for Kylie and I, of course there's things that would definitely take it to the next level. Like we'd have to ride on the carousel and try to get her on Jingles. And you know, so like that's one of them. If it was at the holiday time, she loves Nightmare Before Christmas. So we'd have to throw in Haunted Mansion Holiday. So there's always little bits and moments. But the main thing I would say is just, Disneyland is such a romantic place as a whole that just find those quiet areas where you can feel immersed in the park, but just be with your significant other, because that's why you would be going there in the first place. So that's kind of how my days go: spontaneous, but enjoying our time together.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. That's very lovely.
Thank you.
I would say if you can swing it, book a room at either the Disneyland Hotel or the Grand Californian and enjoy what the resort has to offer. Sort of in the same vein of what Craig is saying, the hotel has, they both have beautiful grounds. Enjoy the pools, check out what's going on. The hotels offer a lot of activities like tours and different things. And even if you're staying at the Disneyland Hotel, you can still enjoy the tours and things at the Grand Californian. Check out the restaurants, go to the spa maybe, but just relax and have a good time at one of those two beautiful hotels. Maybe enjoy room service.
Yeah.
You know, enjoy some wonderful time in your room.
Yeah.
The rooms are gorgeous. So
I agree with that. Another thing I would say, mm-hmm. too, and Doug didn't put this in, and I don't believe I know Doug personally, so I'm sorry if we've met before and I'm forgetting you, but it's with this, for me, the first time you go to a place, you have these memories that they're never going to change. It's your first time there, it's instilled. And if Doug's first time has never been to Disneyland before, and this anniversary trip, or our hypothetical one, if that's the first time, spend so much time just finding a way to keep track of these memories, because they're not going to be easy to forget, but there can be ways to keep them burning inside of you. And if you've had trips before and so this is just another random trip, the big thing is try to make new memories. Don't try to relive old ones. So usually for me, when you try to relive old memories, that's when things don't always work as well. Sometimes it can be very romantic and work out perfectly, and you can relive being in that one spot at that one time. But, you know, other times it can be a letdown, like when you say, oh, remember the last time we ate here, we loved it, and then you go back and find out that the quality's gone downhill, and it just kind of leaves a sour taste. So always work on creating new memories in these mm-hmm. moments too, where regardless if you're in the parks or, like you said, just at the resorts, because that's I think a lot of us who love Disneyland also could say that I could make a vacation of it without going in the parks at all and just staying, hanging out at the resorts. So they're so beautiful.
Definitely. Definitely. And people do that.
They have.
Also, most definitely.
If I was a local, I would try to do that as much as possible. It's the same way I try to do it here every now and then. Mm-hmm. Just have a little staycation where you stay away from the parks and hang out in a resort.
Mm-hmm. Well, excellent questions, and I'm sorry we could not get to all of them, but we will, you know, we will have another Q&A coming up.
Yes.
So, anyway. Well, at this point in the show, you'd expect to hear our This Week in Disney History quiz. However, since as we mentioned, the original plan was not to have this show this week, and because Craig and I had planned back-to-back vacations, we didn't have the time to make the necessary arrangements for the quiz, but it will be back next time. Just to let you know, I will be at the Walt Disney Family Museum on Saturday, July 7th for the talk by Disney animator John Pomeroy titled Walt's Imagination. So if you are there, please be sure to say hello. So, Craig, until next time, where can our listeners connect with you on the Diz Unplugged?
As always, Tuesdays on the Walt Disney World Edition podcast, Thursdays on the Universal Edition podcast, Wednesdays on the Best and Worst of Walt Disney World, random days on the Diz Daily Fix, Fridays on Connecting with Walt, and then Twitter and Instagram at Teleclaster.
Mm-hmm. And you can send me messages at michael@wdwinfo.com, on Twitter at michaelbowling121, Facebook Michael Bowling with the Connecting with Walt banner, Instagram Michael Bowling the Diz, and you can connect with me and Craig on Twitter on our official Connecting with Walt Twitter page, at Connecting Walt. If you would like to listen to more shows on the history of Walt Disney, his studios, his Imagineers, and Disneyland, check out our Disneyland podcast archives for my Disney history episodes at disunplug.com, and look for past episodes of Connecting with Walt on iTunes, where you can subscribe to our show and leave some positive reviews and ratings. So thank you for making us a part of your day. And remember, I only hope that we don't lose sight of one thing, that it was all started by a man, Walt Disney, and his brother Roy.